Okay. Should I wait for the recording to start? Oh, it started. It did not start.
I think you can go ahead.
Okay. Got it. All right. Hi, I'm Adriana. I'm a love addict and a codependent. It's really good to be at this meeting. I didn't realize which meeting this is, and if it's which one I'm thinking it is, it's actually the meeting I got sober in Brentwood in LA when I came in 8 years ago, and it was my home group for 2 years, probably more than 2 years. And this meeting really saved my life, and so did this program continues to save my life. You know, to give you some context of what it was like or what brought me in here, I was 2 years sober in AA when I came in. And I had gotten into a relationship with 1 year sober or a little less in when I had 1 year sober. And I really had like no concept that I had this disease at all, like no idea. And this relationship ultimately became my higher power. I didn't see at the time that it was, I had this hyper fixation on the other person, whether I should be with him, whether I should not be with him. A lot of like the tugging and pulling of, I would find myself like wanting to create fights so that he would like have to like show his love to me. And then when he would come close, it was like overwhelming and I didn't really know how to be vulnerable. And what happened was we would break up and get back together, and it would be this cycle that started to continue over and over again for the last few months. And I had someone look at me and like to the point where I could not function when we were broken up. Like I had to take 2 weeks off work at one point. And I remember when we got back together after this like 2 weeks we were broken up, it was like literally like my nervous system was calm and I could breathe again. And it was like the world just looked brighter. And that's the moment I knew there was something wrong. And yet I still did not come into this program, even by the suggestion of other people. And we got back together and finally broke up again. And at that point, I was in so much pain. And I knew something was truly wrong, and I didn't know what it was, that I tracked myself into treatment with 2 years of AA sobriety, and I was in treatment for 35 days. And when I was there, I had a therapist look at me and tell me that I have love addiction and also PTSD from my childhood. And I looked at him and I was like, do you really think I'm a love addict? And he was like, do you think my hairline's going to grow back? And I really was just in so much pain. And that's the level of pain I had to get into to be willing. Like I had to be that on my knees. And, you know, checking myself into that treatment center, they took me to 12-step meetings. And the reason I jumped right into it was because this is one of the meetings they would take me to in those 35 days that I was there. And I would come in and I would like literally take like any service, like opportunity to be of service, because I was so uncomfortable in my own skin. And I would be like, yeah, let me be like the leader for today. I'll read this. I'll do anything, because I just wanted to get out of myself for a moment, because I was still in so much romantic obsession. I thought I had just lost my air. And, you know, when I was in that treatment center, I called somebody that I knew was in this program. I asked her to be my sponsor. And I immediately started going to so many meetings and working the steps. And it's been a slow recovery for me. It's been very slow and humbling and miraculous in so many ways. I'm jumping around a little, but something that really came out when I was in that program, and I had been in therapy already for a long time, was a lot about my childhood. And I think I finally was willing to get deeper and start talking about my upbringing. And I started to see, I grew up, and I mean, I knew this logically, but it was like, I started to actually acknowledge what I had experienced and how it affected me. And through the step work, I started to see that, you know, I grew up in a household with a mentally ill mother who was very engulfing. She would say things like, "You love your father more than you love me." She was, you know, the parents were divorced. And also she was unpredictable and also incredibly patient and loving at the same time. So it was super confusing. And then a father who was very present and took care of our family financially and provided and showed up, but was like lived with his head in the sand of what was going on. And if I ever had big emotions, it was like, "You're the problem." And it's not to say that like I had bad parents. They're people that have worked incredibly hard on themselves. My mom's treated today and my dad went through his own therapy and they're still flawed. But it had an effect on me. It had a big effect on me, and especially around what I thought love was, what it meant to give love and what it meant to receive love, and also what safety meant. And really through working these steps, I started to see I was seeking safety outside of myself and these men. And I'll get to that more in a minute. But, you know, after withdrawal was so important, and I did withdrawal so imperfectly when I first came in, I was not the kind that was like, "Give me my bottom lines, just tell me what to do." I was like, "Okay, I'll try this," and then kind of do it. And, you know, I was very willful, but it was like the disease had such a hold on me. And the things that were really hard for me were like not looking at like my ex's Instagram, not looking at like the girl that he might be dating and like compare myself. And I, you know, it says in our literature that in withdrawal, we chip away. We can chip away or we can go cold turkey and the effect is the same. And I really held on to that because I really struggled. So for anyone that's new and like you don't understand like bottom lines or you're struggling with that, like there's no right or wrong way to do it. The thing that was always the same is that I was honest and I kept coming back and I wanted to desperately change. And, you know, eventually those started to lift, those obsessions started to lift, and I started to, you know, and I had a lot of top lines, and I thought, you know, top lines are so important for me in recovery. In that time frame of being in withdrawal, like my career expanded and my relationships with family changed, and I was more, even my friendships with my longtime girlfriends became a lot more intimate. I started to really see like how to have real emotional connection that wasn't just through a relationship or dating, because I was somebody that was always in a relationship. And I took some time off dating, and I spent 2 years out of a relationship, which for me was, I needed that. And when I started dating again, I had a dating plan. And for me, I was like, I'm not somebody that jumps into a relationship. It's like a lot of the stuff in the dating plan for me, I'm like, I already do this. But what helped me so much with it was it helped me really get present on dates. I remember calling my sponsor one time, soon after I first did my dating plan. And I was like, I'm going on this date. And it was after I had like a surgery. And like, I was like, I just need to go on a date and like feel normal. And like, yeah, that's human. And she was like, well, if that's the reason you're going on a date, maybe you shouldn't be going. She was like, and if you're going to go, why don't you try to actually just sit there and be present with another person and learn who he is? And like that simple concept was so foreign to me, because I would be dating to be like, is this person going to like me? Do I like him? Is this going to become something? Like there was no surrender and no just being open to another human on like a human level, and trying to tell a lot of story, and even 20 minutes feels short. And, you know, to fast forward a bit, I got into a relationship with somebody, 2 years, a little like 2.5 years into recovery, and he was really everything on like my ideal list, except for one thing. I said I would never date somebody else in recovery, and he had, like, now he has, I don't know, like 16 years sober. But at the time, I was like, I'm not going to date another sober person. Thank you. And, you know, God's funny in that way, right? My sponsor in another program today told me she heard a speaker say, you know, I had to let go of, like, of the life and I'm going to butcher it right now, but, like, the life I envisioned for myself and let God provide the life I deserve. And I'm like, oh, wow. And I heard someone say something very similar, and it stuck with me because I heard somebody say something like that very similar. And actually, when I was in New York, visiting and at a New York slot meeting at one point, and the speaker was like, I had to smash everything that I believed about love and sex. And I had to let go of thinking, like, I can never be with another sober person. I don't want to be with somebody who's, like, as crazy as I am. And this person who I'm marrying in 6 weeks has been the biggest mirror for me, like the absolute biggest mirror. And I'm grateful I'm with somebody who's in recovery. And that being said, this relationship has not been perfect. It has been the biggest lesson in connecting me with my higher power, because he's not it. And we were together for 2.5 years, and we broke up for 1 year. And I went into another major withdrawal. And I, again, am so grateful. There are women in this room. There are many women in this room, actually, who saw me during that withdrawal. And it was the ugliest, like, most beautiful thing. And that's, like, how I view it. Because I got to go into a deeper layer of healing. I got, you know, different outside help to deal with more different underlying issues. My career re-expanded. Because I, again, got so hyper-fixated on this person of, like, am I with the right person? Am I not with the right person? Made him my source of safety. It was super controlling. And, you know, he had a part two. And we went 1 year not dating. I took 8 months off. And it was, I think, it catapulted my spirituality, as painful as it was. Like, really as painful as it was. And I started reworking my steps at that time. And, you know, we reconnected, and we reconnected after a year with my not knowing if I was going to date this person again or not. We spent, like, we had a phone conversation. We spent, like, 3 dates, went on, like, had a lunch, like, a brunch, a dinner, and then, like, decided to go on a date. And I followed a dating plan. And when I say that, was thank God for that dating plan, because the girl here sitting being like, oh, I don't need a dating plan. I needed a dating plan. I was like, we need to be back together. If we're not back together now, like, this is never going to work. He still had, like, resentments towards me. I still had, like, a lot of fear. And I remember he said something to me once. He was leaving my apartment after, it was, like, during COVID still, and it was, like, we had a date at my place. And he was leaving, and he could sense my anxiety and, like, my graspiness. Because I was like, well, when am I going to see you again? And he's like, yeah, I can't be responsible for this. Whatever is going on here, I can't be the one to hold this right now. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. And each time, and, like, thank God for somebody like that, you know? Because he said it lovingly. And I get to be the person that holds that for myself. And when I can't, I take that to my higher power, because my higher power can't. And it's been such a lesson in, I don't even know how to put it. Like, I don't know. Today, I just looked at my partner and I was like, I just love this person so much. And not because I'm in, like, lust with him, or because, like, I think he's, like, the hottest person ever, or because he, like, is, like, doing anything that, like, it was just, like, it's a sense of, like, comfort and ease. And I'm, like, he was literally sitting there just, like, watching TV, like, honestly having a weird look on his face. And I'm, like, I don't know, I wasn't getting anything in that moment, but I was, like, I just love you so much. And it's, like, what they say in, like, you know, in other meetings we read like the transformations from healthy to unhealthy relationships. And it's like there's this secure attachment, and it's a secure attachment that in a lot of ways I felt in my childhood and in a lot of ways I didn't. And like there's this ease and there's this comfort and there's this balance. And that's really from, I hear that. Thank you. How many minutes is left?
You have 5. You asked for another 2-minute warning.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, you know, I really want to talk, you know, I try to, you know, I always feel like I never have time to give like this whole like backstory, but you know, my partner and I still trigger each other all the time. And well, not all the time, but at times, and especially planning a wedding, you know, it's super stressful. And it's bringing up a lot for me. It's really bringing up a lot. And there's bringing up feelings of like, you know, these like deep wounds that like I didn't even like know they were there, and I'm grateful that I'm that they're coming out to be seen again. And it's super uncomfortable. It's super uncomfortable. Like I feel like every other day I'm like triggered with something new, and like this weekend it's been like, oh, it's like hopping from thing to thing. And I'm like, you know, if one person can't like show up to something, or if like my fiance's parents act a certain way, it's like what's hitting me is like these core wounds of like, oh, I'm not feeling seen, I'm not feeling heard, I'm being rejected, I'm not deserving of love. And that's at the core of it. I'm not deserved to be seen and loved for who I am. And I'm like, oh man, that's still there. It's like, I'm always like, and that's why this program was so, has always been tough for me. Cause it hits at that core stuff. Like it really hits at those core wounds, like in relationships. And like, I want relationships in my life. And it's been such an opportunity to be really uncomfortable and heal these old stories. And right now I'm really work and not take them to my partner for him to fix them. And I'm not saying I've done that perfectly, because I've definitely done that at certain times. Like when I'm in fear, like there was something with his parents, and I'm like, I got into fear. I felt like I was like trying to be controlled, which is like when it's hysterical, it's historical. And I'm not denying my reality. Like there are certain things that like legitimately were frustrating. But I was seeing that I was having this pattern of like unloading it on my partner, that, you know, I'm like, but your mom did this and your dad did this. And when I tap into like the compassion, I'm like, this isn't his fault. You know, I'm like, this isn't his fault. And like the second I can see like, oh, the little boy that like grew up with those parents, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, why am I putting this on him? And it's not for him to fix. And the adult me can have, like, a rational conversation with it. So it's not, like, this linear thing of, like, oh, I just am fully recovered, you know? But, like, I hear that. Thank you. What SLAW has given me is that I get to live in a daily practice and have a daily reprieve. And sometimes it's, like, you know, an hourly reprieve or a minute-by-minute reprieve of getting back into my recovery in SLAW and showing up differently. And you know, my bottom lines look very, very different today. I think our bottom lines change with our recovery. I'm not one of those that's like, I've never believed in like putting like my bottom lines on a sponsee, because those are my bottom lines. I think it's all very individual and where we're at and that phase of recovery. And like I used to be the one that like I had bottom lines of like, don't look in like your boyfriend's phone or emails. And I'm like, I mean, I could never imagine doing that today, but you know, my bottom lines are more like working on not lashing out about something, or like working on not taking my triggers to my partner. I can tell him I'm feeling triggered. Like yesterday he came home and he saw that like something happened, and I, you know, I'd had just had a tough conversation and it jolted me. And he's like, he's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, oh yeah, this happened. And he's like, okay. And like, we have like a signal we make. Anyone he knows. And he's like, oh, you're just like feeling that way. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, okay, I'm here if you need anything. But in the past, I would be feeling that way. And I'd be like, you fix it. It's like, I didn't want a partner. It's like, I wanted like a makeshift parent. I wanted the financial support, like, you know, the financial savior. I wanted the person that was obsessed with me. I was like, I literally wanted a fantasy. And it's like what we say, like, you know, we idealize however it is in the characteristics, but like essentially I would have a fantasy of who that someone should be, thank you, and like they would crash and fall from that pedestal, and I would blame them for not fulfilling my fantasy and expectations. So I think that's 2 minutes left, and you know, I'll just touch a little bit more on God. My biggest relationships today are with my higher power and with myself before other people. When I'm not tending to that, when I'm not, you know, tending to my inner life, and when I'm seeking outside of myself for what is readily available within and in connection to my higher power that I look at as like, oh, loving source. I look at it like, I see my higher power as like my higher self. I, you know, I'm not grounded when I'm grasping for, you know, anything, whether it's like in any category of my life, from outside of me, like, and, I do like a daily 11 step. I meditate every morning. It helps me get grounded. It helps my brain slow down. My brain moves really quickly, and I'm still like that addict that wakes up and I'm like, I, you know, like already thinking of like the 50 things that like might go wrong that day or what I have to do. And, you know, and like this stuff comes out in my relationships when I'm not taking care of myself. So it's really important for me to connect with God first thing in the morning. And lately I've been much bigger on prayer than I've used to be. Cause there's something so beautiful and just, I'm like, oh, I can ask for help at any moment of the day. I'm like, it's not just people that I can call. Like, you know, I don't like, yes, I need fellows. I need support.
Gentle time.
Thank you. And I need to give back. But like, yeah, there's just this universal love that is always there when I need it. So thanks for letting me share.